This is John Dane, former CEO of Silicon Valley Bank, managing general partner of Startup Capital Ventures and Tupatelli Ventures.
And can you give us your opinion on why other people should listen to the show?
They should, if they're truly trying to learn, if they're trying to get information to make themselves better leaders, better managers, if they're interested in starting a company, growing a company, making it more successful. In those circumstances, I think there's definitely, because I've seen the list of people you brought on, Evan, and it's a great list of individuals. And so in those circumstances, I think they should certainly listen to the station, your program.
Greater Good Radio.
I use as a rule of thumb that I'm trying to get about 5 times my money in 3 years or 10 times my money in 5 years.
Hi, we can design your home in 1 minute or less.
Inspire.
If you are doing your passion on a daily basis, then you're never going to have to work a day in your life.
Greater Good Radio, brought to you by Central Pacific Bank, Fiercely Loyal Banking.
Welcome to Greater Good Radio Hawaii, where we develop tomorrow's leaders by bringing you up close and personal with today's top business people. Greater Good Radio Hawaii is dedicated to social entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Evan Leong, and with me is my co-host, Carrie Leong. Today's show is brought to you by Central Pacific Bank, Fiercely Loyal Banking.
Thank you, Evan. Today's guest is Kenway Chong, one of the local boys who brought the E&O Trading Company to Hawaii. Kenway started his business career over 15 years ago as a financial analyst in New York to run Box2Go and E&O restaurants. Kenway is also a board member of the Hawaii Theater, the Gift Foundation of Hawaii, and Langtree Estate and Vineyards. Please welcome to Greater Good Radio, Kenway Chong. So welcome to our show, Kenway.
Thank you.
So you're currently playing an active role in the E&O Trading Company. Could you tell us a little bit more about your role?
My role is as the managing partner of Hawaii and soon to be Maui. So our partnership really consists of four active members. It's myself and Chris Hemeter Jr., a gentleman named Rodney Liu, both of them from Hawaii as well, and another partner, Micah Brody. For that partnership, for what we're doing out here, I'm the active partner because I live here and it's easier for me to keep my finger in the pulse of everything.
So prior to you becoming a partner, especially in Hawaii, did you have to work in the San Francisco restaurant?
I didn't. I just had to eat there a lot. Okay. San Francisco, San Jose, and Marin.
So, you know, Trading Company was already in existence before you actually joined them as a partner?
Correct. The first one opened in San Francisco in 1997, and then in San Jose in 99, Marin County in 04, and then Honolulu opened in 05.
Was it Chris Hemeter and Rodney that opened it?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And then how did you end up getting involved?
You know, it's with a lot of things I've done, it's kind of been a really indirect transition. You know, when I was in the capital markets, I got involved in both the restaurant from a financial perspective as well as a storage company. And then when I decided to leave the capital markets, our storage company was getting bigger and I took an active role in that. And I came back to be involved in that on a day-to-day basis. And then when I was selling the storage company, I decided my next step would be running the restaurants. So I took a much more active role in the restaurants then.
Okay. And E&O Trading Company, what type of restaurant is that for people who don't know?
It's a Southeast Asian grill. And what we try to do is we feature a lot of dishes cooked over Keawe hardwood on our wood-burning grill. But what we try to do is we try to bring a lot of the cuisines of Southeast Asia together under one restaurant. So we have representations from Cambodia and Laos and Vietnam and East India, Malaysia, Singapore, and so forth. So someone could really come into our restaurant and have a medley of dishes from 6 different countries at one meal. All of our dishes are not necessarily authentic, but they're authentically inspired, and then we use some creativity to tweak them a little bit.
When you joined this group, since it was already kind of established pretty much in San Francisco, how difficult was it for you to come in and, you know, be an additional partner and then also be friends with these people, so you're doing friends and business at the same time?
Well, it was difficult from the sense that I didn't have any experience in running a restaurant day-to-day. I mean, my only experience with restaurants was being a guest in a diner. But it was relatively easy in that, given that we had restaurants running since 1997, all the systems and tools to really run a restaurant were in place. And so not having to build that from ground up made it much easier. It's almost like getting into something with a running start. And it was just a matter of me trying to learn the business day to day so that I could really contribute and keep my finger on the pulse of things and make a difference.
Did you ever have experience working in a restaurant atmosphere?
I was a waiter in college in Kenmore Square at a little restaurant there, and I was there for about a year and a half.
So it seems that as an entrepreneur, you're going into almost unrelated industries.
Absolutely. You know, it's I enjoyed the capital markets where I started off, and I spent a long time there and had a great time doing it. I mean, it's just mentally stimulating, and the environment, the pace of it is really stimulating and invigorating. But after a while, I just got burnt out. I mean, my wife and I looked at each other in 2001 and said, you know, what are we doing? I was traveling 2 weeks a month, and we had, you know, our first little girl and our second little girl, actually, and so this is no way to live. So we decided we're going to move home, and it's never an easy time to leave something you've invested so much time in, which was my business at the time. Said, you know, let's go home. And luckily, there was the storage company getting bigger and stronger and more financially successful, and it was a real opportunity for me to come back and be involved in that. So for me, it hasn't been necessarily choosing a career path per se and moving from businesses of like type. It's really been, you know, what are the opportunities to develop myself, but also balance out my lifestyle.
So when you came back, you went right into the storage business. You had started that already in
correct.
My New
partner,
York?
My partner in the storage business is Chris Eldridge, and he had started that in 1998. And over the years, from 1998 to 2001, it got bigger, and we acquired one of our largest competitors, and it was a real enough company for me to come back and work on full time. So
how long did that last for?
I came back in 2001, and we just sold it in January. We sold the majority of it in January. We still have a small interest in it, and we're looking at liquidating the rest of that as well.
So you've always been an entrepreneur by heart, because you've always started these new companies. They're unrelated, but they're business ideas.
You know, but I haven't started them. I've been involved from the early stages financially, but I haven't really been the risk taker. You know, I spent a decade in the capital markets where I was working for somebody else, so the capital is really at risk by somebody else. The risk-taker extent really came in as I was managing portfolios, you know, pulling the trigger to invest in different currencies and bonds for on behalf of investors. And the risk, though it wasn't my capital, was my reputation. Lately, coming back here, it's been getting involved more entrepreneurially. The storage company was relatively an easy opportunity because it was pretty stable cash flow. It didn't really entail a whole lot of risk. And that went well. We were fortunate with that. So the restaurant business is really the most risky venture I've taken on.
You're listening to Greater Good Radio Hawaii. Please visit us online at greatergoodradio.com. Today's guest is Ken Wei Chong, co-owner of E&O Trading Company and board member of the Gift Foundation of Hawaii. Our show is brought to you by Central Pacific Bank. Fiercely, Loa Banking. So Hemeter was a classmate of yours at Punahou?
No, actually, Chris was a few years ahead of me. He was 82, class of 82, and I was class of 86.
Okay, were you good friends?
We weren't great friends growing up. We did know each other. Our parents were friends and knew each other quite well. And it wasn't until 1995 when Chris moved out to San Francisco. One of my dearest friends is a guy named Rodney Liu, also from Hawaii. And he was Chris's classmate at Punahou. And Rodney and I ran around the same circle of friends in San Francisco. So when Chris moved out to San Francisco after he finished Harvard B School, he ran around with the same group, and that was us. And that's where he and I really got to know each other quite well.
How long was the transition of trying to figure out if you were going to bring this to Hawaii, building the relationship, and actually doing it?
The transition wasn't very long at all. It actually started with my role on the board of the Hawaii Theater. You know, I'd been on the Hawaii Theater since 2001 on their board. And in 2002, actually, we started looking at the Indigo space. There was a possibility of it becoming vacant. And I loved the character of that space and the sexiness and the romance of downtown and Chinatown and that space in particular. And it just didn't work out for us there. But at that point, Chris and Rodney and Mike and I talked about it, and we decided that we wanted to do something here in Hawaii. And the timing worked out well with the sale of Box to Go. And so I had, you know, a lot of resources, mainly my time, available, and the energy and the desire to do it. So the decision to do it happened pretty quickly. The actual execution, it took a little while to find the right space, ultimately, to go through the lease negotiation and build out.
How did you folks go ahead and choose the location you're at now, which is at Ward, right?
Correct. We looked around to a number of spaces. We looked at some spaces downtown here. We looked certainly in the Ala Moana area at Ward and even Waikiki. And in the end, what we really wanted to do was to build a strong local clientele. And when we looked at the demographic of Ward, looking at it and seeing it was really 85% or so local based business, that's where we decided we wanted to be.
How hard was the transition going into restaurant from the storage business and from bonds?
It wasn't hard at all. It was easy because it was so exciting, you know, and it still is exciting. I mean, it's a great business, and you've probably heard of you know, you've heard it before. I mean, every day is a new challenge, and there's always new things to encounter, and I love that. You have to have 100% of your wits with you all the time.
What kind of business lessons have you learned along the way that you were able to apply to these different types of industries?
You know, I think with everything, the lesson that always rings true in anything, whether it's working for somebody else or whether it's storage or restaurant, is personnel. Especially in these times right now where unemployment is so low, everybody's vying for the same good people. You know, all major lessons learned about personnel, how to train them, how to mentor them, how to get them on your side and get their buy-in, and then how to try to retain them and develop them so that they have a reason to stay. It's not just money anymore.
So how are you guys actually doing that? What do you have a secret sauce that you can maybe share with us without giving away too much?
No, I don't think it's a secret sauce necessarily. I think a lot of it's common sense. The ideas are common sense, and then the hard part is the execution of it. Thinking about the ideas to get your employees buy-in, and get them involved in decision-making is easy enough to make that commitment to do it, but actually executing is the tough part. Being consistent in your ideas and your communication on a day-to-day basis. Being fair to everybody and holding everybody accountable and nobody less accountable than others. I mean, that's the hard part.
And what is your strategy of who are you looking for? What kind of employees?
You know, I think that the restaurant business in particular is a very unique animal, I guess. The nature of the staff tend to be pretty transient. It's a cash-based business for the servers and bartenders and so forth. And in some cases, you have great loyalty from staff. In other cases, it's a job where they can earn money and you know, they punch in, they punch out. And so trying to find people with a character, the character of somebody that has a long-term commitment, has a sense of responsibility and accountability, and wants to be a part of something that's growing is the first thing you're looking for. And from there, you can really train people and mentor them to become part of your program. You can find other people who are great at what they do, but if they're still looking at it as just a job and a means of income, it's sometimes difficult, if not impossible, to really convert them to the culture we're trying to build.
Thanks, Kenway. We'll talk more about that after the break. Stay tuned for more on Sports Radio 1420.
This is John Dane, former CEO of Silicon Valley Bank, managing general partner of Startup Capital Ventures and Tupatelli Ventures, and you're listening to Carrie and Evan on Greater Good Radio Hawaii.
How'd he sell his company to Akamai Technologies for $3 billion?
Find out at greatergoodradio.com.
Who donates 6% of sales to make more money?
Find out at greatergoodradio.com.
How do you get 100 stores and 100 million in sales in less than 10 years?
Find out at greatergoodradio.com.
Who raised $50,000 in a few weeks for the tsunami relief?
Find out at greatergoodradio.com.
And all while benefiting the community.
GreaterGoodRadio.com. What does coaching have to do with running a business? Welcome to the Money Minute from Central Pacific Bank. Today we're talking with Sherry Lee, commercial banker.
Whenever we hear the word coach, we usually think of the folks who teach our kids soccer or baseball or some other sport. But coaches aren't just for kids. There are business coaches out there who can help you guide your company. Like a soccer coach providing motivation to a team, a good business coach can energize you with new ideas and new growth strategies. That includes analyzing industry trends and developing your network of contacts. Most importantly, a business coach can provide you with an objective outside opinion, free from the emotions that come with being an owner. Just like in sports, good coaching may be just what you need for your business to win consistently.
Today's Money Minute is brought to you by Central Pacific Bank, where you'll always find bankers that are fiercely loyal to you. Central Pacific Bank, member FDIC.
This is Gail Jennings from HawaiiDiner.com and EverybodyEats.org. I read selectively all of the papers, but I tend to read more of the columns at Star Bulletin. A lot of it is I like Erica Engel. I like her column, The Buzz. I get good information from that. I like their coverage of the different issues. I like the Star Bulletin.
Would you recommend other people to read Star Bulletin?
Absolutely. I think we need to be as informed as possible. Star Bulletin.
This is Jim Tollefson, President and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii. I definitely would recommend the Chamber of Commerce to others. The benefits are that you get to meet other businesses, get to work together with other businesses, and help you improve your business to make more money, to be successful. If you're not a member already, give me a call, 545-4300, extension 388. I invite you to join us in creating a better Hawaii, Hawaii that's better for us, for our children, and for the future.
Back with Kenway Chang, co-owner of E&O Trading Company and board member of the Gift Foundation of Hawaii. So Kenway, before we broke, we were talking about your employees and the interview process. Are you able to give us some idea of what types of questions you're asking to find out more about their character and their values?
Sure. You know, I'm always interested to see on somebody's resume, and this is really talking about management level positions. I'm not that involved in the interview process for a lot of the staff level positions. But for managers, I'm always interested to see, aside from their credentials and their schooling and where they've worked before, what their interests are and what's important to them outside of work. And to me, you know, I look at my priorities, and if I'm going to work with somebody and entrust somebody to run a significant part of the business and have a lot of responsibility, I kind of want to find someone who's compatible and, you know, has a priority of, doesn't necessarily have to be family if they're not married and don't have children, but it could be a fidelity to friendship, or to their parents or siblings, and somebody who enjoys recreation and things outside of work, where work's not everything.
Are there any questions that you're asking that are kind of tell-all questions?
Not necessarily. For each person, it's different. But, you know, I often want to know, for instance, in positions of authority before or responsibility, how they've mentored other people, things that weren't going that well and how they turned them around. And how they identified somebody that might have had the raw material that they thought and what they looked for. Yeah.
So what has inspired the open walls and the Asian theme at E&O?
The theme for the Ward Center location is an outdoor Asia marketplace. And so each of our restaurants follows a different point along the E&O story. And so when Chris Hemener Jr. was in business school, he wrote this story about the E&O Trading Company. It was a fictitious company set amongst a historical backdrop of the 1800s and the trade routes between the Southeast Asian countries and Europeans. And so he wrote this great story of these fictitious characters with a lot of romance and spice and so forth. So as the restaurants were developed, each one kind of fell within a different place in that story. So the first restaurant that opened up in San Francisco is the Trading Warehouse. It's where everybody came into port to meet this English trader and his partner, a Sri Lankan gentleman. And it was a place where people stored their wares. And while they were storing their wares, they went upstairs and dined and had great foods. And the foods were made by this gentleman, Bailey's wife, who loved cooking and had a passion for cooking. And as she traveled around Southeast Asia, she picked up different recipes and flavors and we put them together at the Grill House, the E&O Grill House. And that was the idea, the genesis for the first E&O Trading Company. And so the San Francisco unit actually looks like a trading warehouse. You walk in, it's burlap bag walls and bamboo hardwood floors and crates along the walls. And upstairs then is more of the white tablecloth, linen, the fine dining. So that was the first point in the story. And then San Jose took on the financial center and Marin County became the Southern Thailand Retreat. And Honolulu was inspired by the outdoor Asian marketplace. So when you come into our restaurant here, you have elements of indoor and outdoor under one roof. You have a bar with its own freestanding roof and you have a facade of a brick structure. With its awnings and porticos and windows. And you have our kitchen with a roof on it as well. And so as you walk throughout the restaurants, you have somewhat of a feeling of being indoors looking outdoors or vice versa.
So are you finding that story and that kind of romance helps out the business?
You know, it doesn't help out the business necessarily because not everybody knows our story. On a Honolulu menu, on the front page is our story. So it gives someone a good idea as to how that story evolved. But I do think it helps out in that it helps us get creative and really excited about developing a restaurant concept. And I think that really plays through into the finished product. So when people walk into our restaurant, for the most part, I don't think people think that it's Disney-esque. I think they walk in saying, wow, this is really different for Honolulu. There's no restaurant like it where it's really nicely designed. The lighting is perfect. It's very rich. It's warm. And it's you know, clearly a different type of ambiance. You know, and I think the market recognized that. We won the Holly Aina Award for Best Ambiance. So I don't think it makes a difference in helping people understand the story, but it makes a difference in the experience that they receive when the guest is there.
You also have a very interesting story. You traveled to Southeast Asia. Could you tell us a little bit more about those travels?
Sure. It was a long time ago, and it was in 96. I was managing money for a fund in San Francisco, and it was long days, and I got burnt out, and I decided I was going to travel for a little while. Wasn't married, didn't have any children, had no attachments except a home. So I rented out my house, and I took off, and it was supposed to be a four-month trip just to go and see Vietnam and part of the world I wanted to see. And it turned into 15 months. I couldn't get away. I flew into India. I was supposed to be just passing through. I got stuck there for 5.5 months, fell in love with the country, and decided that I wanted to see so much more of Southeast Asia. The more I traveled, the world got bigger. And it was hard to pull myself away finally.
So what are some of the lessons that you learned during those travels that maybe have helped you today or can help others?
You know, I think that traveling solo in parts of the world that were, for the most part, pretty safe, but in some cases they're a bit edgy and you know, it's developing countries. I think the biggest lesson was just, you know, realizing things that would have been barriers before or things that would have deterred you visually or you know, for sense of fear, to be able to get through them. And, you know, I think that happens every single day now when I look at things and when I encounter certain obstacles, there's nothing really that looks that disparaging compared to some of the things I saw there.
You're listening to Greater Good Radio Hawaii. Please visit us online at greatergoodradio.com. Today's guest is Ken Wee Chong, co-owner of the E&O Trading Company Hawaii. He serves on the board of directors for the Hawaii Theater and the Gift Foundation of Hawaii. Our show is brought to you by Central Pacific Bank. Fiercely, Loa Banking.
So Ken Wee, how did you get involved with the Hawaii Theater, and does it have any bearing on your business at all, or is it just something on the side?
You know, it doesn't really have a bearing on my business, and it wasn't my interest to go into something for business purposes. But, you know, when I first moved home, I'd been away from the islands for about 15 years, and I wanted to get re-involved, not just through business, but through other organizations as well. A good friend of mine, Michael Pfeffer, approached me and said that he'd been on the board for the Hawaii Theater for a number of years and wanted to know if I was interested in it. You know, I hadn't really been to the theater in a long time. I'd been, you know, briefly by it and so forth. And so I did a tour with Michael and with Sarah Richards, had lunch with them, and it was really interesting in what they were doing in terms of not just the theater itself, but I mean the structure itself is a beautiful structure, but in terms of what it meant for the revitalization of downtown. And I liked that idea. And so I decided to become a part of the board, and I was fortunate that they asked me to do so. And it's been a great, I'm actually on my fourth year now, and it's been a great experience working with some really neat people. What I really liked about that board and like about the board is that it's a dynamic group of people, and for a board of 40 some odd people, it tends to be extremely nimble and efficient and effective in doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Are you able to share with us your, not necessarily your vision, but the board's vision of how the theater would impact Chinatown?
Well, I think that it's supposed to be, the intention is for the theater to be kind of the cornerstone of a cultural revitalization of downtown. You've got a great or a beautiful facility in the theater itself, and I think it complements a lot of the architecture downtown to the extent that downtown becomes more of a live-work environment as opposed to just a work environment. I think the theater adds a nice dimension that adds activity at night as opposed to right now a lot of it's vacant at night, a lot of it's dormant at night. And you've seen that recently with Hotel Street and the revitalization of Hotel Street. Indigo has played a huge part to it. But now all the art galleries and so forth. So I think what they've been looking for and trying to develop for, you know, the last or since the 80s when they first took on this project is really coming to fruition now. It's great to see.
So how did you get involved with the Gift Foundation? And does it all fit in together? Or are they just separate?
It doesn't fit in together. It fits in together for me in that you know, I've always told myself and my wife that being back here in Hawaii, you know, I probably have the capacity to be involved with two nonprofit organizations if I'm going to make a difference and be effective at all. And so having been involved with the Hawaii Theater kind of fulfilled my sense of cultural philanthropy. And really the humanitarian side hadn't been fulfilled. And so when Vijay Kobayashi and Don Takaki and some of the other founders of the Gift Foundation and at the time Prescott Stewart came up with the idea to start an organization in Hawaii called the Gift Foundation, really where the mission was to focus on youth education and wellness, to me that hit home in terms of fulfilling that yang versus a yin or vice versa, in terms of my nonprofit involvement. And that's how it came to be, and it's been a great experience so far.
Can you explain a little bit about the Gift Foundation and what they do, what it means to you, sure, for people that may not know what it is?
Sure. The Gift Foundation was originally made up of 13 of kind of our peer group, and a lot of people who you've known, you've interviewed them here. But really the idea was to get our generation more philanthropically involved, and philanthropically involved in organizations that were not our parents' charity. And a lot of our parents' charity, you know, for better or for worse, had to do with a lot of the cultural arts, which is great. And some of them didn't, but, you know, a lot of them were large, whether it would be the United Way or the Red Cross and all very worthwhile organizations. But for us as a group, trying to raise money annually for a beneficiary or multiple beneficiaries, we thought we could make a greater impact looking at smaller organizations. So part of our mission was to look at organizations that are youth, education, or wellness related. One of the criteria were that the entity had to be run with the entrepreneurial spirit, and that with a small budget, they could do quite a bit and leverage those resources. It also could not be our parents' charity. And it had to be run or founded or heavily influenced by our peer group. And so it was a way of leveraging our efforts to affect our peer group and others as well.
Are you able to share with us a story or maybe an experience, something that really impacted you from giving back to the community and being involved in these foundations?
Well, you know, I think that whether it's the Hawaii Theater and seeing some of the shows, the shows, whether it be the shows for children or, you know, the artistic shows, I think it's wonderful to see, but it's also great to see people's expressions as they come out of the theater. And, you know, going down to First Fridays and seeing the energy down there and realizing that theater is a part of it. I mean, you've got this huge marquee up there that's beautiful, and it glows at night. It lights up right around Mark's Garage and Indigo, and you see a great bustle down there. And the energy of what downtown is becoming is rewarding to see that, you know, theater, I think, played a large part in that. And then on the Gift Foundation side, I think that to see our peer group wanted to be a part of this. I mean, this year we had a number of people that wanted to be a part of the board, or if not be a part of the board, to just help out with it. And to see them really responding to the call for action of getting involved, I think has been very encouraging. We also see that through the number of organizations that have come to us asking for sponsorship. Clearly, I think the effort and the mission of Gift Foundation has gotten out there. A lot of people see it as a potential source. We try to make it as non-bureaucratic as possible for these organizations. They come and they interview. If we like them, we commit to them. And it's not really any paperwork or grants needed to be signed or anything like that. It's, you know, we'll go down, we'll meet with them, we'll see what their cause and their efforts are. And if we believe in it, we'll say that's who we're going to support this year. And it becomes relatively simple. And again, you know, it's trying to foster the entrepreneurial spirit for nonprofits and leverage the resources that we can raise with these people who are involved in these organizations to really make a difference for our community.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Kenway Chong, for joining us today on Greater Good Radio Hawaii. For more information on today's show, please visit us online at greatergoodradio.com. This is your host, Evan Leong and Carrie Leong, saying please join us next time for another episode of Greater Good Radio Hawaii. This show is brought to you by Central Pacific Bank. Fiercely loyal banking.